I'm with Pastor Gene Carlson of Westlink Christian Church.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to make sure, let you know that this is going to be public information on an archive at KU. And so are you comfortable with that?
It's okay.
All right. Perfect.
Just well, so you don't ask for my social security number. And
yeah, I'll try to keep it, you know, yeah, that sort of stuff to a minimum. All right, well, I suppose let's just start from the beginning. Where were you born and raised? What year?
I was born in a farming community, primarily Swedish immigrants, German immigrants, northeast Nebraska, on July 13th, 1937. My father was, his parents came over at the turn of the century from Sweden. And my mother's background was German, and father was German, and her mother was Welsh, British, whatever.
Hmm.
Okay. And since you mentioned it earlier, I was born Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since my grandparents came over from
Sing Swedish.
Sweden.
Yeah.
Right. That was the big deal.
So you were born Lutheran. Were you raised in the same way? You were brought up in
Actually,
Lutheran
my
church?
Mother started going to the Christian church, and my dad didn't go to church when we were smaller. So I ended up being raised in the Christian church, although I was baptized as a baby in the Lutheran church. Yeah.
So you mean Christian as in like non-denominational?
Well, no, it's of? Actually, it is a denomination, Christian Church, Churches of Christ.
Mm.
Yeah.
And this was still in Nebraska?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So throughout your childhood, then you would say that your religious perspective was informed more by your mother's influence than through your father's?
Yes, it was.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And what age did you come to Kansas or move to Kansas?
Well, I came to Kansas in 1955 on a track scholarship to Kansas State University. That's why I came down here.
And what did you study at Kansas State University?
I was in music ed. I had, until I was given the opportunity of the track scholarship, I had planned on going to a Bible college in Minnesota because my heart was set on being a pastor. So after 1 year at K-State, I realized I wasn't doing what I really wanted to. So I gave up the scholarship and went across the street to Manhattan Christian College and graduated from there with a BA in 1959.
So after Manhattan Christian College, after you got your bachelor's, then that you said that you had kind of an interest, or a calling to the ministry?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that was your first year at Kansas State that you kind of felt that?
No, way? I felt that before while I was in high school, and because of the opportunity for the track scholarship, I took it. Mm. But in the course of that year, I realized I wasn't doing what I really wanted to as far as college was concerned.
Were there any specific persons, books, material that you came into contact with that influenced you throughout your childhood or perhaps during this time to make you make you perceive, you know, a calling or to generate interest?
Well, you know, the book was the Bible.
Mm.
And the primary influence and understanding about it came from the people that I was surrounded by, my parents, the pastor at the church, other lay people at the church. I'd say that they had a lot to do. We call it mentoring nowadays, but they had a lot to do with helping me shape my view.
Mm. And you said that you got your degree from Manhattan Christian College.
Yes.
In
1959.
Mm-hmm. So after that, did you enter the ministry right after that?
Well, I actually did. I went to Indianapolis primarily to go to seminary, but at the same time, while I was there, I was called to start a new church, be the pastor of a new church in suburban Indianapolis. So I was doing two things. I was preaching full-time and going to school full-time.
That must have been difficult.
Well, I wasn't married, so I could concentrate.
There you go. Women, you know.
Really, yeah.
So what, after that, you were preaching and in school full-time in
Indianapolis. In Indianapolis, right, yeah.
Right. So what after that? What happened after that?
Well, in the course of that ministry, I was married to my wife, who's from Indianapolis, was raised in Indianapolis, 1962. Then in 1964, we received a call from this church, Westlake Christian Church in Wichita, Kansas. Hmm. So we left the church in Indianapolis, and we moved out here in the late spring, I think sometime in maybe April, May of 1964.
And that's when you started ministering here?
Yes.
64.
1964, I wasn't a Christian yet.
And you minister here from 64 until...
Well, I retired 3 years ago. I actually served 42 years in the church.
Wow. Yeah. It's quite an impressive tenure.
Mm-hmm. Unusual.
I feel like we kind of skirted over your childhood. What was it like growing up primarily in what community in Nebraska?
It was a little farming community. It was Swedish, German immigrants. We lived on the edge of town, and I enjoyed fishing and hunting. I grew up in the outdoors, and you know, I grew up during the Depression, the end of the Depression. So, I got a job early on, you know, like carrying papers or working in one of the stores in town. You know, I had a really rich childhood based upon the close-knit friendships we had in the community.
So, what were the religious groups in your community like?
Well, there was the Christian church that I was a part of, which was, more or less center-of-the-road evangelical Protestant. Then there was a Salem Lutheran church. There was a German Lutheran church, mm-hmm. Presbyterian church, Methodist church. So there was primarily a Protestant community.
Yeah. How did you come to identify? I mean, being raised in kind of a primarily Lutheran community, I would
yeah.
assume. How did you come to identify with a more Christian, evangelical, kind of non-denominational stance?
That was a result of the church that my mother was going to, because that's the kind of church it was. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in that milieu of a fairly strong biblical emphasis, upon personal relationship with Christ. What would they call kind of lump under evangelical.
So from 59 until 2006, you're pastor of Westlink.
From 1959 to 1964, I was pastor of Southport Heights Christian Church in Indianapolis. And then in 64, we came to Wichita.
Yeah. Thank you. I was kind of confused. So from 64 until 3 years ago?
3 years ago.
You were pastor of Westlink. Aside from their letter of interest or when they contacted you, was there anything else that drew you to this particular community?
Well, I felt like there was an opportunity here at this church. And I would say the church culture attracted me, the kind of people that were in the church, and they were progressive, they wanted to grow, I thought I knew everything at age 26, so.
Well, you mentioned growth. I know this church has definitely seen some marked growth mm-hmm. over the past 10 years,
yeah.
And I can only imagine how much it's seen in the past.
We've had a history of, it hasn't been explosive growth, but we've had steady growth for, the last 45 years.
What is the size of the congregation?
Their attendance, I think, is still running middle 2,000, maybe 2,200, 2,500, three services, one on Saturday, two on Sunday. Probably the membership is 3,000 or 4,000 at least, I suspect.
So, and how long do you think it's been like that? Maybe.
Well, we've been running over 2,000 for a decade, probably.
So that's a substantial amount of time. What is it like to minister to a congregation that large? What's the day to day life like? What are some of the benefits of being able to interact with that many people? But
mm-hmm.
what are some of the drawbacks of sometimes?
Well, the transition I had to go through, because the church was 150 people when I came, it became a church of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Was the fact that I couldn't have a close personal relationship with all the people. So you have to develop a culture where there are a lot of people who are interacting with each other in the context of small groups, primarily ministry groups and so forth, so they can have a rich relationships. That's critical. It's not just a matter of people coming and sitting in a pew and going home. They need to have opportunity to enrich their lives, and that happens because we develop relationships.
I think we're going to get run into by the sun here in a bit.
Yeah.
If you want to move over, you can. I'll be fine though. gosh. I was considering a congregation that lies. Are there that large? Excuse me. Can't really talk here. Are there any notable characters or people that stand out, have stood out in the years? Even people from other congregations that your religious body has interacted with?
Well, yeah. There's all kinds of people along the way, you know, that leave an impact on your life and that have had a contribution that they've made to the life of the church. And probably a lot of those folks are the ones who were actually in the leadership when I came, that maintained their relationship to the church and grew with it across the years. A lot of those folks are gone now, but there's still several that are still here. Yeah. And then our staff grew, and then what happens as your church grows, your staff grows, and the senior pastor spends a good share of his time working with the staff. In other words, mentoring, discipling, following up on the staff. So the last probably 20 years of my ministry here concentrated more on the staff than on probably a lot of individual people in the church.
Speaking of the staff and administration, how is the church governed?
The church is governed by a board of elders that are composed both of lay and professional staff.
Is that are they taken from the church?
They're from the leadership. They're from the membership of the church. Yeah.
So the Wesleyan Christian Church then is independent. It doesn't.
It's locally autonomous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's locally autonomous, which is characteristic of the denomination that we're a part of, and it's self-governed. It's not a democracy in the sense that the people, you know, elect the elders. They confirm the elders. And so they have an important hand in selection.
Okay. Does it have any? Are there any conventions or like regional?
Well, the functions? Christian Church, while it's locally autonomous, has agencies like Bible colleges and missionary organizations, and there is a convention that tends to be looked at as our national convention called the North American Christian Convention. It kind of pulls everybody together.
How often does that convention meet?
It meets yearly.
Yeah.
But because we're non-denominational, we claim to be non-denominational, a lot of the pastors have really found a great deal of support in the growing evangelical movement that's outside of our brotherhood.
Yeah.
You know, so.
How does the church support itself? Where is its income primarily drawn from?
Church, the income comes from the members.
Primarily to donations.
Donations, yeah. Right.
How are these finances managed? But again, I mean, you don't have to reveal the intimate details if you don't want to.
But no, that's no problem. You know, the Board of Elders establishes a budget, and the staff has to live within that budget and get the approval of the Board of Elders to change it or add to it. And then every year there is both a financial drive to raise money for the local costs, the general fund and, say, building fund. And then there's a separate drive to raise money for our missions outreach program. So we have a giving envelope that has three opportunities. Now you can give to missions, general fund, or building fund.
Okay. Did you want to...
This is better.
Yeah, the sound is coming through pretty strong. How does your church perceive itself in relation to... two-part question. How does your church perceive itself in relation to other Christian bodies, Methodists, you know, Pentecostals,
sure.
Catholics,
mm-hmm.
As well as other religious groups, Jews, Buddhists, Muslims?
Yeah, we would see ourselves here primarily as a part of the body of Christ without a lot of concern about labels that people have by way of denomination. And while we are, I guess our judgment line would be that we do hold to a more or less orthodox or evangelical standard for the Christian faith. So in some respects, we might be closer to Catholics than we would be to some liberal Protestant groups. As far as other churches, like Muslims or Jews or so forth, I think we would realize, you know, particularly with the Jews and the Muslim faith, we come out of the same background. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we have some things in common, but also has some, you know, some very different approaches to things as well.
How was the, you mentioned coming here in 64, was the church extant before that time, Wesleyan Christian Church?
It started in 59. It was a new church. It was started in 59. So when I came here, I was 5 years old and had just built the first unit over on 10th and Tyler. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any of who were the influential leaders or who the leaders of the church at that time were strongly influenced by?
Who influenced me or who influenced the church?
Well, at that time, who were the bigger influences in theological writings or who were you strongly influenced by early ministry? Yeah.
Well, back in those days, I would say C.S. Lewis was a very prominent apologist. It was the days of Karl Barth and other neo-Orthodox theologians. It was the days before the church growth movement really took form. And it was so the church itself, the church's congregations as a whole were quite traditional in terms of their practices, worship, and so forth. It was also back in those days when the whole idea of the church providing counseling help for people started to grow. So, I'm trying to think of some of the prominent counselors that, shaped kind of pastoral counseling.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah.
Considering you're being here for quite some time, you can provide a history of the church body. But has the church, the Wesleyan Christian Church, or any of its, any groups related to it, have they undergone any divisions in history?
Our church has never had what you would call a substantial division.
As an aside to that question, or kind of supplementing it, have there been any like major doctrinal crises or things like that that have caused significant divisions in the congregation to where there's been a kind of a conflict over certain things or?
Only one that really caused some people to leave was when there was a emphasis upon the some of the Pentecostal doctrines, charismatic doctrines back in the 70s. And so we lost some people who decided that they were more comfortable in a Pentecostal church than they were in ours. And we've made some significant theological shifts across the years, but it hasn't been shifts that were done in the kind of way that it isolated people or caused them to react or to even leave the church.
Could you talk about those theological shifts?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that in the Christian church, it's often referred to as the Restoration Movement or the Campbellian movement. Here's the Campbells, mm-hmm. Alexander and Thomas Campbell. That's what we're a part of. And I grew up in that milieu, and there was a strong emphasis upon believers' baptism by immersion, and it was very close to water regeneration. In other words, you weren't saved until you got baptized. So that's something that I worked through probably back in the 60s and 70s, and as a result of that, also our church worked through that. So that we came out on the other end of believing that salvation is by grace through faith, period, and that baptism is necessary, but necessary as an external act of confession and obedience rather than as something that saves you. So that was a big step. And then another one that we worked through is the move from being primarily Arminian to more Calvinist, at least in terms of the personal security. We're not a five-point, this is not a five-point Calvinist church, mm-hmm. but we do have a strong emphasis upon the security of the believer.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of doctrine, then, what are some of the central teachings, or what's the message of Wesleyan Christian Church?
I think it's very Christo-centered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very much centered on Christ. You know, our mission statement is to connect people to Jesus Christ and help them become His fully devoted followers. So, and we see the scriptures as the tool by which we can give content to that faith.
Hmm. So, then how does one become a member of the church?
Okay, they are asked to go to a, what would be like a new members class, mm-hmm. where they are walked through, you know, what we believe and what it means to be a member of our church. And then they, each one has an interview with, could be either staff or lay leader, that helps give them advice as to whether they should join and so forth, answer their questions and so forth. Yeah.
So then once, and is that is there a sort of a renewal of baptism or some sort of ceremony that they go through then after that?
No, there is. There's times during the year where the new members come to the front of the church and are introduced as new members and welcomed into the body. Primarily, we worked quite hard on getting new members connected to the body, not just joining the body. Mm-hmm. So we try to get them connected in ministry and try to get them connected in some kind of face-to-face group.
So then once one is a member, what are some of the requirements or expectations of members?
I think, you know, one is you expect people to attend the services. You expect people to live the Christian life and take it seriously. You expect them to give. You expect them to get connected. You expect them to be involved in giving, ministry, and so forth. Yeah.
So, considering being a pastor from the mm-hmm. mid-60s, of the same church
sure.
from the mid-60s to the early 2000s, that's a lot of history. That's a big
mm-hmm.
period of history
sure.
right there. Have the views, the social or political views of Wesleyan Christian Church changed over the years?
Oh, I think they have evolved. Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. You know, one of the problems you have if you're evangelical is that people assume you're Republican.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So you know, we've had to stand back and say, you know, we're not. It's not that we don't endorse political candidates, mm-hmm. but there are issues, you know, that we've taken an active social part in, such as abortion, gay marriage, mm-hmm. those issues. And then, we're also involved in seeing the need to be involved in the social needs in the community, mm-hmm. you know. And so we have quite a few connections and lots of ministries and give a lot of money to agencies in the community that are helping people that are without jobs or whatever, you know, single parents, I mean, the whole array of things.
Yeah.
Stuff.
What was the, just thinking history, things like the Vietnam conflict or
mm-hmm.
Desert Storm or, you know, even the conflict in Afghanistan we're engaged in now. How has the church positioned itself on these issues? I mean,
yeah.
Has it issued an explicit...
I don't know. We'll take one at a time. I don't think that thinking back on the Vietnam thing, we never took a position on it. I think there were a lot of people that were, of course, very disenchanted with the whole thing,
yeah.
you know, and saw it as a mistake. But we didn't take a position and say, you know, as a church, we believe this is wrong. And that was true, too, of, say, the Iraqi war. I think there was a lot of, even at the time that started first came down, a lot of questions about that.
Yeah.
You know, and the wisdom of it. And I think the same thing is true with Afghanistan, and still is true with Afghanistan, that a lot of people are real uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even with the change of administrations mm-hmm. on that issue.
Well, you spoke of the church being at 10th and Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
That's... that's a little less west side, but still kind of,
sure.
west, yeah. Well, no, actually, it's a little bit more west side than this. Is it? We're at 13th.
Right well, now. Yeah. That was right across the street from Northwest. So we were identified more with the Wichita school system there.
Yeah.
Now we're more identified with the Mays school system as well as Goddard.
Yeah.
And Wichita, because we're kind of set between them.
So can you talk a little bit about the progression from that position in the city to over here and the economic and personnel and other changes that facilitated that?
Well, one of the things that we did in the process of moving over here is did a demographic study of the area. Mm-hmm. And demographically, this area is referred to as kids in cul-de-sacs. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's the majority are married couples with one and a half kids or something like that. I don't know why. So that drove our mission, and we developed a mission statement that said that, or a byline, I guess it's a byline that we attached to our title, that we are the family place. So we focused, our ministry is very strongly focused toward families and ministering to moms and dads and children. We have a very, very strong children's ministry and youth ministry.
And then, when did the church move from Tyndall Tyler to over to this location?
2003.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So that's still pretty recent.
Yeah, 6 years ago.
This might seem like a silly question to ask, but did you ever consider joining another religion or consider another possible even denomination or whatnot in your life?
I haven't, no. I really never felt, because I had the freedom to kind of move within the context of this congregation. I didn't have to, I've got to be a Baptist now because that's how I think or whatever. Mm-hmm. No, I guess I can't say that I... There was, because of some personal problems that I was going through, emotional problems, burnout and so forth that I was going through. In the 1980s, I was at the point of resigning and actually leaving the ministry because I was so burnt out. That was back in 1983.
Were there any specific reasons for that?
Oh, we had finished a strenuous building program, and there was some stress I was feeling with the lay leadership at the time. And then there was just some personal issues in my own life, I think, that drove all that. And the elders made a very courageous decision, and one that saved my ministry. They said, what they said is that they wanted me to take a year's leave of absence, full pay, and work through the issue and then renegotiate my contract. So that's what happened.
And clearly they kept you on for...
Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of the middle. That was right in the middle of it all. Mm-hmm. So that was a very... Hi, honey, how are you?
I think that's really about it. This went a lot quicker than what I expected, but that was good. Got to the point. I suppose last question. Do you have any interesting anecdotes or personal stories about life in the ministry, your transition from Nebraska to Kansas, or anything in general that you'd like to share?
There's a lot of them. It's hard to put my finger on one right now.
That's okay.
It's been a being a pastor has been a real joy because of the opportunity to relate to people and with people at very significant levels in their life. And to develop, and that this is the advantage of the, say, 42-year ministry. I've lived out the life cycle with these people here. Birth, baptism, marriage, death, the whole thing. So we have, so many pastors, if they're here, and they bounce around every 5 to 10 years, it's hard to develop lifelong friends. And that's been one of the great joys for us here is the opportunity to be surrounded by people that we've lived with all these years.
If anything else to add, throw out there.
I don't know whether you want any documents or not. This is the history of the church. That we did. We just had our 50th anniversary this year.
Sure, would I be able to?
You can have it.
Oh, thank you very much.
I don't know whether this resume would be helpful, but it's...
That's perfect as well. Thank you. I suppose that's about it. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Yeah.